Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Today is August 25th and 2008, and my name is Chris Newton. I'm one of the co-hosts, and thank you for listening. We appreciate all our listeners from all around the world and sending your emails in, and also you could check us out at the website, traveladviceshow.com. And I'd like to introduce my other co-host, Gerald Fuller from Travel Advice. How are you doing, Jerry?
Oh, fantastic. And how are you doing, Chris?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm really looking forward to our topic today and our fabulous guest. Would you like to introduce our topic and our guest?
I'd love to. We're really excited to have with us Suzanne Campione-Titoto, Suzanne. And she's with CampioniItaliani.com. That's how you'd find her, is Campione-Italiani.com. She'll tell more about that in a bit. And she's president, and we're thrilled to have you, Suzanne.
Thank you so much, Jerry. It's great to be with you, too, especially during my short stay here stateside.
I know. Would you like to begin and tell us a little bit about how you may have started your very unique and exciting company and what it does?
Well, yes. I've been in the travel business for over 35 years. I'm an ex-Pan Am stewardess, and when I met my husband, I've always been with the travel industry as a travel agent after flying, and when I met my husband in Italy and saw him move, I wondered what I was going to be doing when I got there, and I found that there was a real lack of highly cultural type travel in Italy at that time. And especially in the field of food and wine, now it's become extremely popular, but we're talking 16 years ago. The food and wine in Italy was, everybody loved Italian food, but nobody really had any inkling of doing any kind of programs tour-wise to Italy for those purposes. And also cultural, music, art, theater, this was what really thrust me into creating Campione Italiani, was for the traveler who had been to all the major big cities, had been on the standard tour, and was looking to really live the life of an Italian and be able to go to out-of-the-way places, be able to experience things that were unique, intermingling with Italian people and meeting them. And just really understanding what the experience was all like. And that was my big thrust, is having people experience Italy, not just travel to Italy, and make friends there.
Fabulous. To begin with, could we start just a little bit about maybe when, if there is such a thing, the best time to go to Italy, or does it matter because of what they're doing and based upon that, or how would you answer a question if somebody says, when should I go to Italy?
Well, the winter is magical, obviously, in certain cities like Venice, but our winters are extremely chilly. So what my opinion about the best time is always the spring and the fall, and I would say from April and May are wonderful months because the frantic tour season hasn't really started yet. So it tends to be a little bit less crowded. The weather is nice, not too hot. And also the fall, you know, in September and October. And then in November, we start getting chilly again. However, I feel that the summer is probably not the nicest time to go. It's extremely hot and humid. And I think people are so uncomfortable physically with the heat that they don't get to enjoy a lot of things. And there's a lot of crowds, too. Usually get the college crowd out of school.
Mm-hmm. If you were going to go to Italy your first time, Suzanne, and you wanted to, and let's not talk about the normal cities that people go to as far as at this stage, like everyone needs to go to Rome and Venice and Florence and probably down to Positano area. If you were going to Italy your first time, and would you agree that those are cities that must be included? And if so, what else would you might add? And how long would you make your first trip if you want to do a good overview of Italy?
Well, I feel that from the States, since you do lose a day going, and you lose, so essentially with the time change, you wind up traveling for 2 days at the end of it all, and a day back, you lose 3 days off an itinerary. So I think anything less than a 10-day itinerary would be really cutting it far too short. I think ideally it's a two to three week itinerary. And I know everybody can't afford to take 3 weeks off of work if they're still working and not retired, but 3 weeks is ideal. 2 weeks is certainly sufficient, and 10 days would be the minimum, absolutely. And I would hope that anybody that would be traveling to Italy for the first time would obviously have to see the major cities, but there is so much to see in the countryside and experience that I would like to see at least a couple of days somewhere out in the countryside so that they can experience what everyday life is. Because obviously, mm-hmm. like any other big city in the world, big cities are geared towards tourists. There's a lot of historical monuments. There's a lot of art and music and a lot of architecture to experience. However, if you want to experience the human side, which I like to focus on, you need to get into an everyday life situation where you see Italians at their everyday lifestyles, making meals, taking their children to school, everything that we do, but it's such a different level because the pace of life is so different than the U.S. So, and I think you mm-hmm. only feel that if you go outside the cities.
Well, let's talk mainly because I think most of our listeners, at least the biggest share of them, would already know sort of what you do in the big cities such as Florence and Venice and Rome. So we don't want to spend too much time there unless there's something really unique that you want to mention. But let's talk about the Italy that you just mentioned, what we might call the real Italy, not that these cities are not real, but the,
right.
the people and the culture and what would you recommend people doing if they're going to go to Italy maybe their second time?
Well,
and explore a whole different aspect of it.
Well, my opinion is that I think most people try to do too much Italy at one time. If they've mm-hmm. been on the first time, oh, they obviously need to see the big cities, but I think as people go the second time, they also tend to make another mistake, is to try to cover too much territory. Italy, maybe a lot of Americans don't realize, is so culturally diverse from one region to the other that we even have a different type of pasta that's produced in each region. Even a basic thing like tomato sauce will differ from one region to the other. And there are typical dishes and typical traditions, for instance, the folklore, because these different areas have been influenced by different people. We have to remember that Italy has not been a republic for very long. It's under just barely coming on 50 years. So this is the first time that this country's been united, and you have to realize that all these regions are different. So I would, you know, if you're going to take a trip, I would, for instance, take a trip and concentrate on the northern part where you would do the lake regions of Italy, which would be Lake Como, Lake Stresa, Lake Maggiore, which are absolutely breathtaking, travel through east towards Verona, possibly, which is a beautiful Renaissance city, and then travel to some of the hilltop towns around, well, I happen to be partial to the town I live in, which is called Ozzolo, which is a hilltop town that has an amazing history that linked to the Venetian Republic, and it's both medieval and Renaissance together, so that would be one type of trip. Another trip would be traveling through the Emilia-Romagna region, which is directly south of the Veneto, and traveling through the absolute beautiful food belt, Parma, prosciutto cheeses, the tortellini, and all the very famous pasta dishes are born in that area. So that region alone is a whole different aspect. And then if you travel south, Tuscany has been very popular in the United States for many years, and Tuscany is popular amongst travelers from all over the world, but if you head a little bit east into Umbria and the Marche, which is along the Adriatic coastline, you are apt to see very few tourists, especially the further east you go into the Marche. A fantastic history in Urbino with the Dukes of Urbino and the artwork of Raffaello, one of the most famous painters in Italy mm-hmm. of all time. Beautiful rolling hillsides, fabulous food, much less expensive than some of the more popular tourist destinations. And through there, you can travel back across the country into Rome with only a 2.5-hour drive. So you see, it can be a very easy excursion from Rome as well. So that's another whole section. And then another possibility would to be combine southern Italy with Sicily, which obviously the Greek influence in Sicily has been tremendous. Some of their rooms are more intact than Greece itself. And the history in Sicily with all the invasions and the Roman Empire that was so importantly situated there, and many of the traditions that have had Arabic influence, is a whole experience in itself. So my opinion would be on more than on your second or third or fourth or how many ever trips you, most people go back many, many times to Italy, would be to try to focus on these geographical areas and actually, embrace those aspects of those regions rather than trying to do so many places at one time.
Right. I heard. Yeah. That's okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah. I heard, Susanna, that the southern part of Italy is kind of a little less touristy, right, than the northern part?
Yes, that's very true. The market is what we call central Italy, just east of Umbria. And Umbria is getting a little bit more known amongst tourists because, obviously, Tuscany has been so saturated. But when you go down to Calabria, Reggio Calabria, the whole southern part that would incorporate the toe of the boot as well as the heel of the boot,
Right. Very
little tourism. Much more tourism from Europe, I would say, because a lot of the Germans and the northern Europeans have discovered the wonderful beaches in that area. The other thing I have to mention is Puglia is a very unknown area amongst American tourists. I think the only tourist that I've ever had request for Puglia without my suggestion is somebody that had roots from Puglia and wanted to go back and see family and experience the traditions. But Puglia has an amazing history in itself as far as the Roman Empire was concerned, and it's got an incredible coastline as far as beaches. The architecture of the Trulli homes, which are the conical shaped homes, I don't think they really know where this tradition came from, but it's very ancient. And the food and the wines. As a matter of fact, maybe none of you know that the Primitivo grape, which comes from the Puglia region, is actually what became our Zinfandel in California. So, So there's just fascinating things. So I think actually of the southern part of Italy, unknown destination, Puglia is a fantastic place to visit.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah, very much so. Anybody that's looking for a unique destination and that doesn't want to be running into other Americans, which I know we have many clients like that, a great suggestion.
Well, I've been to Italy more than 70 times, and I agree with you 1,000 times, because each region is so different. I mean, in everything, from almost language to food, as you mentioned, culture, a lot of different music. And scenery, oh, my word, Italy has everything there, from glaciers down to deserts. And
Exactly. It's
absolutely phenomenal. And there's no way that you can do justice, even to Italy, I think, even within 3 or 4 trips, because it's just such a world combined in a very, as you mentioned, very small, compact place. I mean, Italy is smaller than what people think it is.
Absolutely. And, you know, travel times are not difficult in Italy because basically traveling from the very north of Venice down to Rome is about a 10-hour drive in the car and only a 5-hour train ride on the Eurostar. So people can travel very easily by train through the country. I would suggest, however, if you really want to explore the countryside, renting a car. That's the best way to do it. There is train service into the major cities with no problem, and there is regional train service into many of the small towns. However, to be able to stop at a farmhouse who's making cheese and stop for lunch in agriturismo, which have become extremely popular in Italy over the last couple of years, which are they're basically farmhouses. Some of them have sleeping accommodations, but you can guarantee that you have genuine, wonderful, home-cooked meals at these agriturismo. Mm-hmm. You find the food is outstanding, and the prices are about a quarter of what you would pay in some of the big city restaurants. So it's a great option, especially if you're traveling with kids.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned it briefly about accommodations. You want to spend a few minutes on the types of accommodations And because I know one thing that we find with travel advice, talking with people, that they think a five-star hotel is the same everywhere in the world, and a one-star hotel, for example, is the same everywhere in the world. Do you want to talk a little bit about budget travel accommodations versus median price and a deluxe?
Oh, sure. Well, obviously, you know, the exchange rate with the U.S. dollar right now isn't totally in our favor. So we've really had, with the change of the euro from the lire, we've had a tremendous increase in prices, in hotel prices in Italy. And mm-hmm. I've found personally that we've had to make a lot of adjustments in our business as a result of not only the euro-dollar exchange, which was finally going down, which we're all thrilled about, but also in this level that we've reached as a result of homogenizing basically all the European community participants. So now we're working with the euro. The five-star hotels are simply elegant and outstanding, with obviously the most luxurious service available, with beautiful linens, and the accommodations are outstanding. Most people today can't afford a five-star accommodation in Europe. So the four-star accommodations, which had always been the thrust of our business, are now quite expensive for many of our travelers. So we have also found that there's, as a result of this exchange, that many beautiful bed and breakfasts, or small locandas as we call them, which are basically inns, have cropped up all through Italy, including in the big cities, and is a really fantastic option to actually staying in a four- or five-star hotel, because usually they're family-run, usually there's a lot of pride taken by the family in providing outstanding, elegant accommodations, but, of course, they cost a lot less.
How about how many rooms would one of those have as an average? Are they 10 rooms?
Usually you have about eight to 10 rooms. They're not big facilities. And so, you know, booking ahead of time, the old story, is always the key to everything. So I would suggest, if you can book 6 to 8 months at least before your trip, it really makes a difference in getting your first choices, because these beautiful locandas, especially, let's take Venice, for instance, as a city, some of them are very strategically located right near Piazza San Marco and some of the major tourist attractions. But, you know, because they have few rooms, they need to be booked quite a bit in advance. But this is a fabulous option, as are these agriturismos, which I mentioned before. If you want to do rural tourism, this is a fabulous way to go. And many of these rooms are actually equipped with mini kitchens. So if you really want to have a great experience going out to the local grocery stores or markets and collecting wonderful food and doing it at home, if you've got a family to keep the budget down, this is a super duper solution for people that want to travel that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the budget, my Italy might call budget hotels, who do you recommend stay there, and can you describe a budget maybe of one or two star?
Yes, well, you know, sometimes one or two stars are disappointing in Italy, I have to be honest. We tend not to want to book less than a three-star based on what American standards are as far as bathrooms and sizes of rooms. In your one and two stars in Italy, they tend to be kind of little cutout corners of old palaces and buildings, and sometimes the rooms are very tiny, and the bathroom facilities are very small and sometimes almost difficult. I mean, sometimes I've seen some of these hotels where you're practically showering on top of the toilet and water gets everywhere and that sort of thing. So I would much more recommend, if somebody's on a budget, going into an agriturismo situation than going into a one- or two-star hotel. I found them to be disappointing, especially in the big cities, and they're not usually kept up. The government is the one who sets the standard for the stars in Italy. The National Tourist Office is the one who awards stars to different hotels based on their amenities and criteria. And obviously, one or two stars are one and two stars because they don't have those amenities or those services. You'll find sometimes there's not telephones in a room. There's definitely not air conditioning. So if you're traveling in warm time of the year, it's almost impossible, and the humidity levels are very high. You won't find amenities like a hair dryer. As I mentioned, the bathrooms tend to be smaller. There's not a restaurant. attached to the hotel if you're coming in late from a flight and just want a quick bowl of soup or something like that. So I tend to, with my clients, recommend, if budget is an issue, to really do the agriturismo thing. You know, sometimes it's a question of just being 45 minutes or a half hour outside of a large city if that's what you want to visit in. And having experience of even taking the local buses into town is great for family. It's just a wonderful experience.
I know your company one of its specialties is food and wine tours.
Yes.
Do you want to spend a little bit about if there is such a thing as a typical food tour or a wine tour? How would you describe them? What do they do?
What would we do? Well, on our food and wine tours, I'm extremely particular because I happen to be one of the first Americans to ever become a sommelier in Italy, which took me 3 years. Mm. So I'm very, very proud of that accomplishment, and it's opened many doors for me. I've been involved with some of the major restaurants all over Italy, and I have many, many friends that are chefs or sommeliers themselves, and I have many winery friends who are actually winemakers and own their own winery, so it's been wonderful. But my biggest thing in our programs are that we want to concentrate on one region at a time. As we mentioned earlier, each region is so diverse and so different that we like to take the products, the typical products of that region, the typical methods of cooking with the traditions, because there are many things. Just for instance, let me take my region, which is the Veneto region, which incorporates Venice. For Easter, we make an incredible Easter bread called focaccia. But many Americans would think of focaccia as a flatbread with olive oil and rosemary, which is native to Genoa, which is the Liguria region. So you see, sometimes even the name will be the same, but the item is going to be totally different. So we concentrate on those traditional things that are made for traditional holidays, such as the focaccia bread and the Veneto, when we're doing that. We have particular, when we do a Piemonte, which is the Piedmont area all west on the French border, their cheeses are phenomenal, and many of their dishes are cheese-based or involved with cheese. The famous Gorgonzola cheese obviously comes from that region. Mm-hmm. And their wines are so outstanding, they're probably considered the most prime example of wines in Italy, other than Tuscany. Basically, Tuscany and Piemonte are premium wine growers. I mean, these are our prime wines. But all the dishes that we would prepare would go with those wines. So it really makes sense doing a program where we're concentrating on the wines and pairing them with the dishes and the traditions, because they all go together. They complement one another. And our programs will take not more than two regions at a time, where we might do a 3 or 4 day program in one region and then do the neighboring region with that program and being able to combine them. And what we usually do is offer our culinary and wine programs on a modular basis so that they can be built on. As far as wine touring, we could design a tour anywhere in any region of Italy for wine tours, because every region has a wine route and every region is known for a different type of wine and for they differ themselves too. Southern wines are very heavy reds and they tend to be very strong and complement the spiciness, because there's a lot of peperoncino used in the South and a lot of garlic, and obviously you need to have your bodied wine for that. And to the lighter wines of, let's say, Trentino Alto Adige, which has a huge Austrian-German influence, and so the wines are very acidic, white wines that complement more of the heavy, more fatty foods like sausages and all that. So you see, in the South we use a lot of herbs, in the North we use a lot of heavier meats and more, I would say more than European influence type cuisine, with the exception of Venice, which is obviously very sea-oriented. Everything fish is the thing in Venice, and the Veneto really takes on a lot of those dishes. So really a fascinating, from the culinary and analogical standpoint, Italy is a never-ending discovery. It really is. And I never get tired of traveling through the country with clients and discovering another little wonderful restaurant here or there, or learning about another little place that's, and many are artisanal type of food products where a local farmer is just, you know, focused on one little aspect, a culinary aspect, and is producing these handmade cheeses or handmade jellies or pastes, or, for instance, the use of the chestnut. In the United States, very few people know how to use chestnut, but in Italy we use the flour, we make pastas out of it, we make desserts out of it, we eat them whole, we roast them, we boil them, we bake them, we make the famous Montebianco, which is a dessert. So, I mean, there's so many things in each region that it would be hard to say. There isn't a typical thing. What we like to do is vary our program so that people who really love food and wine are able to experience all of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before we go, I want you to talk a little bit about, we covered a lot of it, but if you had suggestions for some of our listeners who have been to Italy before and would like to go back and do things that they may not be familiar with that are really unique or historical, maybe non-touristy, not as well known, but they're fabulous, and when people see them, they say, I should have come here first. Do you want to talk about that just a few minutes?
Sure, sure. I would really like to see, for instance, the Marche region develop much more for those people. And, you know, I there's part of me that doesn't want to let out the secrets because obviously I don't want to see tourists going. These places will be ruined like the rest of the tourist places are in the world. But the Marche for the real tourist who loves Italy and has been back many times, I would highly suggest spending at least 4 days in the Marche and traveling from San Marino, which is the zone of the Republic, as you know, all through the Marche, and you would wind up ending out in Ascoli Piceno, which is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful city. You find very few American tourists in this region. You will find the real Italy, and you will experience an incredible amount of art due to the richness that surrounds Urbino and the Duke, who is a very important person in history. As many of you might know, had a lot of ties to Henry VIII as well. And there's a lot of intrigue involved in those stories, which are really fascinating. And Ascoli Piceno, and of course, the, you know, all the artwork of Raffaello, who is really one of the most fantastic painters of the Renaissance. So that would be a destination, absolutely. Puglia, as I mentioned before, another destination for mostly, I would say, architecture and gastronomy, an analogy for wines, a very hidden away secret. And then I have to also say that there's a whole part of northern Italy that's really unknown to the tourists. That would be basically where we are, which is at the foothills of the Dolomites in the town of Ozzolo, and going up towards Cortina, but actually going into the areas of Asiago, which is famous where the Asiago cheese comes from, but many people don't know there's actually a town of that name that's very famous for its dairy products. Beautiful countryside that really is similar, is beautiful as Switzerland. I mean, absolutely beautiful, rolling green meadows. And up into the Trentino area, because that's another area very unknown to American tourists and very unknown to non-Europeans. So those are three areas that I feel are just really outstanding, that are very mildly traveled. And another one area would be Emilia-Romagna for its absolutely incredible gastronomy. Emilia-Romagna is not as scenic as other parts of Italy as far as the landscape is concerned, but they sure make up for it with their food. So, absolutely fantastic, fantastic. So, if somebody is really doing a food tour, you could not skip Emilia-Romagna. They call it the cradle of the Italian food. So, those would be my main areas that are basically hidden away. And beachgoers, obviously, we've got lots of coastline and beautiful beaches, just crystal clean waters. But those three areas, I think, are just really untouched. and need to be discovered.
Good old hidden gems. Yeah. Well, Suzanne, we want to thank you very, very much. Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners before you tell us how they can contact you?
Well, I hope that everyone in somewhere in their life has a chance to visit Italy, because the people are wonderful, the food is wonderful, the culture is beautiful, the designs, I mean, it's like a walking museum. I really feel gifted that I've had Italy in my heritage, and that I've been able to return and enjoy all the things that I grew up with, only compounded 100 times over. So I welcome everyone to come and visit Italy at least one time and wander out of the big cities, please, because the people are so great. They're there to welcome all of you.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. Would you tell our listeners how they can contact you?
Yes, they sure can. We have an office in Los Angeles, and so we're on Pacific time, and our phone number here is area code 310, and the phone number is 373-2226, and they can also reach us through our website, which is www.campioni.com, and through there, there'll be email contact. You can contact me, Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, at campioniitaliani.com. And we are also listed in the specialty index, which is a specialty travel index that will give you some more information about our company as well. And we're constantly updating our website every year with new and exciting things. So we hope you all get in contact with us, and we would be more than pleased to show you this beautiful country.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Yeah, thank
it's
you
wonderful
for being
having
here.
You talk about this magnificent destination.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye.